On this edition of the Cubs Talk Podcast, Gordon Wittenmeyer and Tim Stebbins and I chop it up on the latest with the Chicago Cubs. Gordon is in St. Louis. Cubs fall big to the Cardinals, make four errors as 10 days remain before the trade deadline.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
At Wintrust, we know true fans show their team pride every chance they get. With Cubs checking, you'll score a Cubs debit card so you can show your support every time you pay. Open today at Wintrust.com/CubsTalk. $100 required to open. Member FDIC.
Let's play two.
Way back! It might be! It could be! It is! Holy cow!
The fly! He scores!
Welcome to the Cubs Talk Podcast, brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking, with free ATMs nationwide, with Gordon Wittenmeyer, Tim Stebbins, and our awesome producer, Tony Gill, who's also a diehard baseball fan. I'm David Kaplan. All right, guys, we got a lot to talk about, a lot to get to. Cubs had a rough night in St. Louis, making four errors. Javi Baez made two of them, one fielding and one throwing at the plate, where he airmailed Wilson Contreras. And this all came on the same day that MLB insider John Heyman said it'll take $200 million to sign Javier Baez. And from my seat, Gordon and Tim, I do not believe that is a hard ask from Javi. I think that was John speculating, but the aggregators in the media world made it seem as though Javi Baez is demanding $200 million. Am I off base in that assumption?
Well, if you're asking me, I think I don't think John Heyman's wrong, but I do think that he speculated, yes. And I think depending on how many years we're talking about, it would be obvious. If we're talking 8 years, then yeah. I mean, that seems obvious where the market for shortstops are. And I know that a lot of people are down on Javi. He took a lot of heat after the errors on Monday night. In this context, I can't give that guy money. He's the sixth or seventh best of the shortstops out there anyway. Those kinds of comments. But I do think he's up there among the best shortstops in the game. I mean, it was an aberration. Monday was an aberration. And I think we've talked about this before. There's a few players on that team that when they make mistakes, now Javi's made mistakes like where he's forgotten the outs or times when he thinks the ball is over the fence and it's not. There have been a few of those over the years. A lot of times, and Monday night's errors, I think, fall into this category. It's about trying to do too much for a team that's pressing right now. There's a handful of guys doing that. I think Patrick Wisdom's error in that same inning was one of those. We've seen Wilson Contreras do that a number of times, sometimes try to do too much. We've seen guys on the bases trying to do that. Rizzo's tried to do that, try to get too aggressive on the bases, and it really looks bad. So I think that's part of it. I think on balance, on the whole, when you look at the big picture, Javi brings you elite fielding, especially when there's high stakes on the line, and he's a big, powerful bat that does get wild at times, but is a presence that has to be respected and is a run-producing bat. And so that there's a lot of value there.
Tim?
Yeah, I mean, like Gordon said, if it's 200 divided by 8 is really not that crazy either. Like, it's $25 million annual average.
No, it is crazy, Tim. You're not giving 8 years. Eight years?
I'm not saying.
I don't think that's what Tim said.
No.
He said, if it's 8, 200's not crazy.
Right. I'm not saying anyone's giving anybody. I'm not talking about any player, but yeah, like, I'm not saying Javi 8-year deal, but 8 years and $200 million as a contract, the average annual value is not as crazy as the initial number that people see. I'll say this about Javi too, though. Now I'll go to him specifically here. He's been kind of like, this has been a good month for him at the plate. I feel like, yeah, the last night was obviously not a good game, and yeah, at the plate he went 0-for-3, but since July 4th, he was hitting like 438, 10 RBI. So I feel like he started to turn a corner. And I bring this up because in talking to Gordon, we've kind of discussed is like, his numbers are obviously down compared to 18, 19, but I'm not saying he's going to hit 438 the rest of the year, but if he kind of keeps up this pace where he's tallying multi-hit games frequently, like he has been lately, by the end of the year, his offensive numbers are going to be pretty good. I'm not saying he's going to have 34 and 111 or whatever in 2019, but he's already got 21 home runs and 59 RBIs. The batting average has been going up. The on base has been going up. By the end of the year, his numbers could be closer to what you expect out of him. And I think that's very interesting for a guy entering free agency.
Hey, let me add something to that too, because again, and some of this is conversations Tim and I have had just almost like off the air podcasts talking about Javi. But in 2018 and 19, from 2017 into that 2018 and 19 season, he started to find himself as a hitter and started looking different than he had previously, took a different approach. He started learning to use more of the field. We saw when he was at his best, he would go on these tears for a month at a time where a lot of balls up the middle, a lot of balls the other way. And then when he got one in his zone, you know, obviously the power and the home runs were still there. And that's when he's at his best. And we saw that 2018 and 19. 2020, we know how that impacted him and a lot of other players. And you have to take that into consideration, how strange it was. But also, coming out of last year into this year, it's still pandemic baseball. There's still protocols. It's still strange. There were, you know, fractions of capacity early on in the season, plus the weather, plus, you know, I know it sounds like excuses, but I think what we've seen lately is sort of a return to that more mature 2018, 2019 version of Javi. It's just taken returning to some sense of normalcy in baseball for him to sort of get back to that. I think that's definitely possible that's what we've seen here in the last month or so.
So I interviewed Anthony Rizzo on our radio show this morning on Cap J Hood, and I simply asked him, are there ongoing negotiations right now before the trade deadline to try and get a contract done? And his answer was, I'm just going and playing every day. Everything is status quo. So I'll take that as there is nothing going on. If that is indeed accurate, do you believe that? Are you surprised by that? Because I would think, okay, here's the best we're going to be able to do. And if that's not enough, I am going to explore what I can get in return. Or is that not how it's going
to
go down?
Well, there's another way to look at it, too, is that he's not as tradable as a lot of other pieces. The likelihood of him getting traded might be lower than the other guys. There might not be a lot of chatter on Jed Hoyer's cell phone for Rizzo. And if that's the case, then what's the rush? Why do you spend your time now talking to him or re-engaging talks? You go see what's up with Javi, and you don't even bother spending any time on it. That could be what we're seeing too.
I think Rizzo's just worth so much to your franchise that it's one of those things where you're not going to get the value that it would be worth trading a face of the franchise. Like, I just think he and a guy in a contract year, nonetheless, like a first baseman rental. Like, I kind of just wonder what teams would maybe offer for that. And that's not a slouch or slight at Rizzo, but he means so much to the Cubs that if you're going to trade him, then I just can't see that happening midseason. I just don't think if he's going to leave this team, I wouldn't do it in a July 30th trade. I would I would do my best to re-sign him. I think we've all talked on this podcast that they should re-sign Rizzo. They should re-sign Rizzo. But if he's not going to be a Cub next year, I don't think you, like Gordon's saying, you don't just upend yourselves in July. And you could obviously always bring him back, but I think you hold on to him and you renegotiate and try to get something done in the offseason to keep him here long term.
Tim, do you think that same – well, let me ask Tim something. Do you think that same face of the franchise value is there in the wake of kind of the fallout of what I think and others have characterized as sort of a leadership gap on the vaccination issue? I mean, when he told Cap that he's not vaccinated, I mean, he took a lot of heat. We knew that would happen with anybody that said something like that. But this is also a team that gave up, abdicated its competitive advantage by having enough guys decide not to. And he's, as you said, he's been this leader. He's openly said he wants to be a leader of this franchise. And you have to think that when that guy says he's not getting vaccinated, it makes it a whole lot easier for the next guy and the next guy and the next guy who are sitting on the fence to say, well, I don't have to either.
So if Tim, just to push back at what you said, if Jed knows, okay, he scoffed at $70 million, I'm prepared to only go to, I'm just pulling a number out of thin air. I may be wrong. $75 million. And Rizzo's like, I'm not signing that deal. You have to explore whatever it is you can do unless you feel like you can't get as much value as a compensation pick, because to let it get to free agency and that's it, and he walks out the door and all you get is the 48th pick in the draft, and you could have had more at the trade deadline.
Cap, they're already exploring it. They're exploring it with everybody on their roster. Everybody. They're exploring everything. I mean, it's a dereliction of duty not to. So they know what the market is for them out there at this point. And maybe that'll change between now and the deadline as teams get more desperate. I don't know if you saw Steve Cohen's tweet, the owner of the Mets, yesterday, basically putting it out to his fans. So do you pay more now? Do you pay a premium now for a player? Do you wait until the final days of the deadline to get a better deal? And then I think it might have been Heyman. It was one of the National Baseball Writers went back at it. I can't remember who it was, but went back at him and said, it's the same. It's the same either way, because you get the player longer if you go get him now. I'm not sure I agree with that, but I do think just the question itself was kind of interesting, coming from what many of us view as maybe the most aggressive owner out there.
You know, Gordon, when you talk about a guy like Steve Cohen, he is a very aggressive owner. He's worth $16 billion. This is his first trade deadline. Do you think Steve Cohen is prepared to go, I'm all in, I can win, they're going to get – DeGrom had no structural damage on another MRI. Does he feel like, just tell me how much I got to pay in luxury tax, I'm all in, because I think with my pitching I can win the World Series? Or do you think we're overstating his willingness to spend his billions?
I think he's willing. I think his aggressiveness is real, and I think he's willing. When I was out in New York, I talked to some people around him who say the same thing. I mean, he's hands-on. He talks to the manager regularly. He talks to some of the players. But I think it would be foolish, because this DeGrom thing, no structural damage. How many times have we heard that? The guy keeps leaving games early with arm pain, and then they go do MRIs and they say no structural damage. Well, then what the hell's wrong with him? I mean, something's not right in that guy, and eventually it will be structural damage. So you keep pushing this guy, you keep riding him, and something seems not right with DeGrom, as much as when he pitches, it looks spectacular. Here's the bottom line. If you don't have DeGrom, you don't win, period. DeGrom's the reason that team's in first place. Hell, DeGrom's the reason that team has a winning record. He's the reason that you have a chance in October if you're the Mets. If he's not there, it's foolish to get aggressive. I get it. You know, it's his new toy. He's got a lot of money. He just signed Lindor. He wants to make a splash. I think he said that. It's certainly been reported all over the New York media. So I get the aggressiveness, and sure, backfill, go throw the farm system to get Jose Barrios. Go get Chris Bryant, you know, bring in reinforcements. Go get Javi Baez to back up Lindor, who's on the IL right now. You know, do what. But Jose Berríos is not DeGrom. You're not going to backfill for Jacob DeGrom, and you got way too many other holes if DeGrom's not on that team to make you a competitive championship caliber club. So he might do it. He might be that aggressive. And he's got an interim general manager, basically. So it could happen, but that would just be foolishness. But for our purposes in Chicago, it's obviously something worth watching.
Tim, did you see the back page of the New York Post today, the headline?
Christmas in July. I just saw
Christmas
that.
With a K in July. Chris Bryant. And then there's a column that says, here's why the Mets need to trade for Chris Bryant. What'd you think of that? It doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, I love the cleverness for sure. That's for one. And I love Christmas too. So that was enjoyable for me. But I mean, I think Gordon's like gone like Gordon with DeGrom. You're right. Like they need Jacob DeGrom. But the thing is with the Mets is they average the second fewest runs per game in baseball. The only team that scores less per game is the Pirates and the Mets. So like, obviously if you lose Jacob DeGrom, that definitely changes, you know, your whole, if he's done, which that's not the case yet, but if it gets to a point where you lose him for the season, that's going to be a huge blow. But they need offense, man. And Chris Bryant is out there, right? Like they definitely need offense, and they just lost Francisco Lindor for probably 4 to 6 weeks with an oblique strain. So this is a team that when healthy, you have DeGrom, Taijuan Walker, Marcus Stroman, and Carlos Carrasco is coming back too. He was in that Lindor trade. He hasn't pitched this year, I don't believe. So they have four great starting pitchers, and this is like, obviously DeGrom has to be healthy, but they need offense, man. So whether it's Brian or somebody else, I think, yeah, they got to go out and do something. And they're still leading this division. That's like, I think they're 6 or 5 games above 500, and they're leading this division because no one else has made a push in it yet all season.
Yeah,
Gordon, I gotta ask you.
But you're kind of making my point. What's that,
Gordon? How does Mike Bryant handle the New York media?
You talk about taking the pressure off of Chris. I mean, if they want to find him, he's easy to find. And if there's a spotlight in New York, he'll find it. Yeah. That would be the most entertaining part of that trade of all seeing Mike Bryant pop up every day in a different New York tabloid.
See, if I'm Chris, much like, and I'm sure you guys heard about Zach Wilson, the new Jets quarterback, offered his mom money to get off social media because she claps back at haters and she's, you know, out there about the anti-vax and all of this. And he said, Mom, please stop. I'm in New York. I'm not just some kid. I'm the quarterback of the Jets. I don't need this. If it's about money, I'll pay you. We got to hook Zach Wilson's mom up with a podcast. Mike Bryant.
That would be outstanding.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, did you know that 80% of the grass-fed beef sold in the U.S. is imported from overseas? It's staggering, and that's why I get my meat from GoodRanchers.com. When you buy Good Ranchers, not only are you getting amazing meat, you're supporting American farms. GoodRanchers.com safely delivers American craft beef better than organic chicken and more. Delivered quickly and safely to your door. Don't play the grocery store guessing game. Know where your meat comes from with GoodRanchers.com. Go to GoodRanchers.com and use the code Chicago for $20 off and free express shipping.
So yesterday, Kyle Hendricks met the media and talked about, you know, the vibe in the clubhouse.
No, he didn't. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. He met Paul Sullivan. Paul Sullivan talked to him in the dugout.
Okay, so that was just Sully. There you go. Good get, Sully. Where he said, we don't know the direction. Do you think that that's 100% accurate, that they don't know the direction? Because it seems to me it's pretty transparent. The direction when Jed said 11 days can change a lot, life comes at you fast, was the quote. It doesn't seem to me that you don't know the direction. Or is that Kyle just protecting his guys?
Well, I mean, they know the direction. It depends on how you're defining that. Do they know what the final look of this roster will be after July 30th or after the season or on opening day next year? Those are the things you don't know. You definitely know the direction. They're selling. They've made no, they're not hiding that. And it's going to be a matter of if they get their price for certain guys. Other guys are also certainly gone regardless of price, because you know you're going to get something for them that's more valuable than a qualifying compensation pick, qualifying offer, compensation pick. So, Kyle knows that. Kyle may not know at this point specifically. I think he has a pretty good idea what his future with the club is, and he doesn't know. Like what direction? I think what he's talking about, because I don't think he's lying. I think what he's talking about is we don't know who's going to agree to what extension and then what that does to a timeline, but we know what direction they're taking. They're going to shop guys. They're going to retool. And maybe that devolves into a rebuild, something that Jed Hoyer doesn't want to call it right now.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, Cap, he said life comes at you fast. He didn't want to call it a rebuild, Jed Hoyer, when he spoke, I believe it was before the All-Star break. But yeah, at this point, I think like Gordon's right. It's just a matter of which direction. Well, maybe it's which direction as in which players aren't here or are here. And from there going forward, like there's so much uncertainty. I think that's just kind of the bottom line, whether that's what Hendricks meant or not. Like, who's here next year? Who can you resign? Like, what do you do in the offseason? What comes with the next CBA? Like, that's what I think. Like, it's just there's uncertainty with the Cubs, especially, but in baseball going forward to next season as well at the same time.
Hey, great point. Because remember what Tom Ricketts said back in early June, I think it was. I think it was during that Padres series, late May, early June. He said the CBA uncertainty will play a role for a lot of teams, maybe including his, on whether they're able to get guys extended and what happens financially into the offseason. So that's real across baseball right now.
So your experience, I've been around a long time. You've been on the beat a long time. Tim brings a younger, more youthful perspective. Will you be surprised if you hear, wow, they got a Javi extension done or a Rizzo extension done or more unlikely, a Chris Bryant extension done? Do you feel like they are truly trying to lock people up right now or no?
I think they truly are if they get their price like anybody else in any other business. You know, I think they have an idea what they can do right now. I'd be a little surprised. I'd be a little surprised if they're able to get something done. First of all, you alluded to it. I think Chris Bryant's a foregone conclusion. He's going to free agency. I think Rizzo, you talked to him today. Nothing's going on right now. There's no rush with him. So if something got done, say, before the deadline, that would really surprise me. Javi's the wild card. But I draw a clue from his brother-in-law, Jose Barrios, who we've already talked about. who told one of the writers in Minnesota that he wants to go to free agency. He talked about, you know, this is what you work for. And I go to free agency and see, you know, see what your value is, see what people are willing to pay you. The fact that he feels that way and doesn't seem to hesitate to say that suggests to me that there's a pretty good chance. I mean, Javi and him are tight, and there's a good chance that Javi sees the world similarly. And from talking to him, all the way back to spring training, he seemed to believe that, you know, free agency was probably where he was headed.
My surprise wouldn't be that, they re-sign Anthony Rizzo. Like, I think, or Javi Baez, whatever, like, that's always been something that you think was a possibility. And I don't know if this makes much sense, what I'm going to say, but I'd be surprised at some degree and some level, only in regards to we've been anticipating these moves potentially happening with the number of Cubs just for a couple of years now. So it'd be kind of like, oh, wow, like they got one, they re-signed one. It's been something that has been talked about for so long here, and that I wouldn't be surprised who it was. I would just be surprised that, like, in a way that, oh, wow, like, this is what we've been talking about for years and it got done. That would be where I'd be at. Maybe that's not, the term isn't surprised, but that's kind of where my emotions or my headspace would be.
Gordon, yeah, what was the term you used? Not malpractice. You used a term earlier in the podcast that they weren't investigating.
Dereliction of duty.
So I went back through, this is going back, it was in 2018. We offered monster extensions to every one of our core guys. And as their right, none of them other than Kyle Hendricks said yes. Do you truly believe that? Because Chris Bryan has always pushed back on that narrative. Do you truly believe that? Now, Rizzo was already locked up, but of Contreras and Baez and Bryant, that they truly were offered extensions. Addison Russell was.
I think they were offered every single one of them was offered an extension. That, yes. And I say that with, like, an offer sheet in written terms, probably not in every case. Like, for instance, Wilson Contreras, as recently as 2019, said that he told them he did not want to talk about a long-term extension yet. And the reason why is he didn't have all his family out of Venezuela, and he didn't want the publicity of a big contract, of him signing a big contract, impacting the safety of his family in Venezuela. So, I mean, there's no reason to believe that that's any kind of deception, or that he's trying to leverage something there publicly saying something like that. I believed him. We were talking in a different context when we talked about that, and he said that. So did they make an offer? Did they get to the point of making an offer to Wilson Contreras? Not formally, because it never got that far, because he didn't want it to go that far. And Javi might be similar, because I know they talked a lot in 2019 all the way through spring training until 2020, until things got shut down with the pandemic. So I know that there was some back and forth and numbers discussed and parameters discussed. I don't know if it got right down to a monster formal deal that Chris Bryant and them, they talked a lot. Numbers were talked about, lengths were talked about. I've talked to every principal involved in that, and everybody, you know, on the periphery of the principals involved in that. And I get different stories from different people as to just how big it was, what it was, what was an actual offer and what wasn't. So I think there's probably grains of truth in most of what they're saying. Some of it's open to interpretation. I do believe the Cubs were ready to make a significant commitment to him, and I do believe it got turned down. So however you want to interpret that, but you know, these things get complicated, especially when the numbers get big.
So Gordon, Tim and I and Maddie, we cover the team very closely. You cover it intensely because you're with them. Do you feel like there is this sense of impending doom, and that we get done taping this podcast and something could go down right now? Or no, I think it's going to go all the way to the 30th simply because they're asking for a high price and teams are going to wait them out.
Cap, I'm going to throw that question back at you because, I mean, look, I don't feel any impending doom. I think it's interesting that you phrased it that way because, yeah, could something come down tomorrow? Could something come down in the next 5 minutes? Absolutely, because they have so many players that have value that are available to any team that wants them. So if somebody wants to come in and grab one, they could do that. Andrew Chafin would be really easy to pick off for a decent offer, for instance, or Ryan Tepera, or you know, or some piece of that bullpen, for sure. Not to mention Craig Kimbrell, Zach Davies, et cetera, before you even get to the core guys. But here's the thing, right? So we've seen this coming. Tim said it. We've seen this coming for years. Is it impending doom? You're probably the hardest core Cub fan on this podcast, Cap. Does it feel like impending doom to you after all these years? Championship, all-stars for some of these guys, an MVP for one of them. All the water under the bridge has brought us to this point where we know that the end of the road is near for the core, you know, broadly. Does that feel like doom to you?
Yes, it does for this reason. I don't know what the future is because I believed in 2012, and I said this to you many times, we would laugh about it when you were on TV with me. We would laugh about it at the ballpark. I truly believed in the plan and lose as many games, draft, sign free agents, build up the infrastructure, and like the when we got Theo Epstein, hey, man, here we go. Then Jed Hoyer's going to join him. Here we go. We are finally going to mean business here. We're going to win and win big. Now, and this is not a shot at Jed because I'm a big Jed guy. If you tell me Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, Wilson Contreras, Anthony Rizzo, Ian Happ, who is a top 10 pick that is underachieved, Kyle Hendricks, Craig Kimbrell. I could keep naming them. If you tell me all those guys are in play and may on the 30th all be wearing other uniforms, I don't know what the future is. I don't. So, yes, and I think the fan base will be devastated.
So when you look back, they won the championship that previous regimes had tried for 100 years to win and couldn't do it. And in particular, the previous 50 to 70 years just to get back to the World Series, couldn't do it. But their sales pitch when they came in was sustained success. We don't want to just win one championship. We want to make the organization healthier so that it has a chance to win year after year. And now we're at the point where they won it. They did what every other previous regime wanted to do and tried to do. And probably at the end of the day, when you look back on it, maybe did it similarly to those other teams. They had some core guys from the farm system and they spent a lot of money on free agents. They made trades at the deadline when they had a chance to go after it, and they did, and they won it. And they've had all kinds of flaws in free agent choices, in some cases trades and also clearly the farm system since then. And so now they got to tear it down and do it again instead of that sustained success. So maybe the deal, maybe we're back to laughing at this idea that their plan was so much different than any other smart guy in baseball.
Except
they won. Right. It worked. I'm not saying that. That's not a shot at them. They did it. But this idea that it was going to be some grander scale and so much more brilliant than anybody else and put them in a place that was just going to make the Chicago Cubs, you know, the Yankees of this century. Obviously, they haven't done that. They failed to do that. And maybe that narrative was the problem.
But, Tim, tell me if you think I'm wrong or Gordon's right or however you want to look at this. They went to the playoffs 5 out of 6 years. That's never happened in the history of the franchise. And the infrastructure, the protocols, whatever you want to call them, the computer that they design, all of it. The Cubs never had any of that. They're at an entirely more professional organization simply because of the guys they brought in Theo and Jet. Is that fair?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I would say like just on this whole subject that I feel like this is what I've thought since February or January, that I just can't imagine all three core hitters going, not coming back, or like not, they're not, them not being able to get one and resign one. And we mentioned doomsday. I think like for fans, I think if you don't bring back any of those guys and you're looking at next year to fill out three, not just fill out three more position players and replace those guys, but you're losing star caliber players. I think that's not going to be, you're not going to be in a good position that way. It's just plain and simple. So I think they've just got to resign one at least, right? Like that if you don't have one of those guys back, at least that's three, your top three, your top four hitters gone. And what does the future hold then? Brennan Davis is coming in 2022. If there's a bright spot, he's hitting really well in Double A, got promoted to Double A this year. So that's a positive, but that's one hitter, and you can't expect him to, you know, come out and produce right away at an all-star caliber level where you have three of them on your roster right now. And if you lose all three, what does that mean for next year and going forward?
Gordon?
Yeah. Four all-star caliber players. You count Wilson Contreras, hitters. Cap, you know, you've talked about them being in a, you know, rebuilding the structure of the organization. Look, everybody in baseball has that now. They had a computer system. They had MLB had a more generic computer system that you could, you know, kind of buy into, almost like, you know, kind of plug into the software and then manipulate it to whatever works for your front office. What they did is they basically reinvented what they had in Boston with their own proprietary system outside of that was far more detailed and structured. And then they brought in all these other guys in these other departments that the Cubs didn't have before. But that's just now what everybody has. And by the way, it hasn't put them in a better place until they prove otherwise right now than they were in when they got there. The last 6 years have been amazing. That is a hell of an accomplishment. The biggest critics during that stretch of winning was the front office criticizing their players, in most cases the hitters, for not doing a better job. So that wasn't even a media narrative. So if they fell short of expectations, that's them admitting that. I agree with you. Five playoff appearances in 6 years, six consecutive winning seasons. That's a hell of an accomplishment, especially for this franchise where it was before, but they're right back where they were. And that's not what they promised. And we'll see what Jed can do, because he's got a hell of a mess to clean up.
Gentlemen, that is a wrap for this edition. Again, if anything of real substance breaks, Gordon's got boots on the ground at St. Louis. We will be all over it, Maddie, Tim, and I, and Tony Gill. So if anything breaks, go right back here to the Cubs Talk podcast, and we will at any hour of the day or night have the latest for you should the Cubs make a blockbuster trade. For Tony, Gordon, and for Tim, I'm David Kaplan. This has been another edition of the Cubs Talk podcast brought to you by Wintrust, home of Cubs checking, with free ATMs nationwide.